Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Earlier in this program, we talked about people's tendency to remember historical atrocities too much in ways that make it hard for societies to move on. Yesterday, we talked about the chants of USA that broke out after the news that Osama bin Laden had been captured and killed, and whether that's a perfectly reasonable expression of patriotic unity after an enemy responsible for much death and destruction was killed, or if the chanting crossed the line into a jingoistic, inappropriate celebration of someone's death. That debate over where the line is between just enough and too much is an intrinsic part of the concept of loyalty. And there just happens to be a new book out that explores it. Wall Street Journal columnist Eric Felton joins me now to talk about Loyalty, the Vexing Virtue, just out from Simon & Schuster. Eric, welcome to WNYC.
Brian, thanks for having me on.
What makes loyalty vexing?
Well, the problem with loyalty is that, to start with, it's an essential virtue. It's the virtue of being reliable, of being trustworthy, and it underpins every relationship we have that matters. It holds together love, it holds together family, it holds together friendship and community. And so without loyalty, those relationships fall apart. And yet at the same time, because there's loyalty in each and every of the relationships we have that matters, those loyalties tend to proliferate and then ultimately come into conflict with one another. And so the loyalty we may owe to family may be at odds with the loyalty we owe to a friend, or the loyalty we owe to a friend might be at odds with the loyalty we owe to country. And we're always struggling with all of these loyalties we have and trying not to betray people and institutions that we have a bond to, and finding ourselves in a position where we have to betray somebody one way or another, and it drives us crazy.
What's a concrete example? I know you cite E.M. Forster's line, "If I had to choose between betraying my country and betraying my friends, I hope I should have the guts to betray my country."
Right, and you know that we understand that line in a very modern way, and it's something that's been debated for thousands of years, this question. And ultimately, there's no straight answer on that. It kind of depends. You know, if your friend is a Jew who's hiding from the Nazis and your country is Nazi Germany, well then yes, your loyalty to your friend is absolutely the right loyalty. If your friend happens to be, say, the Unabomber, then maybe you're better off going to the FBI. And in fact, David Kaczynski was in that position when he read the New York Times Unabomber Manifesto and realized that it was his brother who had penned it, and he had to make this decision. Do I look out for society and all the people who are being killed and maimed? But in doing that, I would have to betray my brother. And he really struggled with that, as I think people often do struggle with these questions of conflicting loyalties.
Listeners, we can take some calls on the question of loyalty. Do you remember a time when you had a conflict between opposing claims of loyalty, between family and community, country and religion, whatever? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for Eric Felton, author of Loyalty, the Vexing Virtue. I think Japan's recent experience after the earthquake and tsunami is interesting on this topic. There were admiring reports of emergency workers who put their communities ahead of their own safety and their families, but also reports that part of the problem at the nuclear plant was a loyalty to the company over community in covering up flaws in the plant before the accident. Do you think different countries draw the line in different places, or is it a human-wide conundrum?
You know, I think it's a human-wide conundrum. In researching this book, I found that in really any society you look at, people struggle with this question of when is it right to be loyal, who is it right to be loyal to, and when you have these conflicts of loyalty, how do you shake them out? But you're absolutely right. You know, we think about how it's good for a company to have loyal employees. It allows the company to function, and it's an essential part of a working institution. And yet, if the company's cutting corners, you want those employees to stand up and maybe be whistleblowers. Well, that's a lack of loyalty. But if, on the other hand, if people were blowing the whistle at every turn at the slightest infraction, companies would fall apart and never be able to work at all. And so people have to really struggle with these questions of when loyalty is right and when loyalty stops being a virtue and becomes a vice. You know, the question of people going out in an emergency being selfless, and this has been a long problem for conflict of loyalties, for people figuring out how to do emergency response. You know, there have been all of these tornadoes across the country with so many people killed, and in the 50s there was a terrible tornado that hit the town of Beecher, Michigan. And none of the firemen turned out, except for one, to help put the fires out, and the whole town basically burned down. And it was because the firemen were looking for their own wives and children in the wake of this tornado. Oh. And the only fireman who showed up was the guy who had been with his wife when the tornado hit. He knew she was okay, and so he went to work then fighting the fire. And he didn't really blame his fellow firefighters, but you can see how it becomes a clash of loyalties. Do you go out there and try to save the community, or do you look to save your own family?
What a horrible position to be in. Hopefully nobody will ever have to be in a position like that, but that story indicates it does come up, extreme circumstances that test conflicting loyalties. You point in the book to the excesses of patriotism that led to the rounding up of Japanese Americans during World War II, but you seem to think we're bending over too far backwards in the other direction when it comes to Muslim Americans today?
Well, you know, I think what we need in loyalty for a country to survive is, especially if you're going to have a liberal democracy, you have to be able to trust that everyone else in the liberal democracy is in it with you for the big picture. And that means we can all disagree about what we think should happen in the country, but our disagreements are loyal disagreements, which is in the same way that in a family you might have lots of arguments about what's best for the family, what's right to do, but if the family is functional, underpinning that is love of family. And I think that the sort of kind of patriotism that we need to strengthen our country and strengthen our institutions is one that sort of looks at the country as a family, as a sort of love of country that's like love of family. It doesn't mean we have to say my family's the best family ever or say my country's the best country ever, but rather a commitment to the family, a commitment to the country.
Though I think I should say that, you know, in fairness, that sometimes torn loyalty between religion and country is complicated, not just for Muslims. There's a front page article in the New York Times today about David Barton, who apparently Republican politicians are flocking to in Texas, who, you know, advocates strongly the primacy of America as a Christian nation. If many Jews had to somehow choose between America and Judaism, it would not be easy. So it's not just about Islam.
Oh, it's not just about Islam. In fact, people have struggled with this in every society for thousands of years. You know, you look at people as diverse as Thomas A. Kempis in The Imitation of Christ or Mahatma Gandhi, who would say that the only way you can be true to God is by eliminating all other loyalties. Now, one of the problems, though, is that this can be done from a noble point of view, but it's also really open to abuse, which is we will see that cult leaders and people who want to take a religion and use it for nefarious purposes will often say, look, you can only be loyal to God, and God wants you to do this and this, and then someone who's in the thrall of that notion that there can only be one loyalty are rather more likely to do extreme things in pursuit of that loyalty. So in some ways, our multiple loyalties may drive us crazy, but they also may have a moderating impact on us by forcing us to think through what we owe to whom and when.
Eric Felton, author of Loyalty, the Vexing Virtue, 212-433-WNYC. David in Manhattan, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, and Dr. Felton, congratulations. I wonder if this is not a question that has changed over time. In a lot of societies today that, you know, other than the industrialized West, and certainly throughout history, loyalty to family, community, client or kinship network was terribly important because that was the only thing you could count on. The state could not deliver. Today, the state can deliver on rights, justice. It can protect one person, or it can protect a family. And therefore, we don't have to worry as much about whether loyalty to a family, is so necessary.
Well, you know, David's point is well taken. And yet, on the other hand, if you were in a total life-threatening crisis, and you had to think, who can I count on to make my survival their absolute top priority? Would it be the government or would it be your family? And there are a lot of examples. Think about Katrina, you know, sort of recent examples. While the government was flailing about figuring out at every level what to do and people were drowning, you had families who were going and getting boats and taking the boats to rescue their parents who were at hospitals, for example. And in the book, I talk about one family that went to Memorial Hospital in Katrina and rescued their parent who had been stuck there, and managed, because of that loyalty, to actually rescue a lot of other people as well when they were there with the boats. And so, you know, it is a problem that persists, and as David put it, though, it is also a problem that's been around forever. You go back to Greek tragedy, such as Sophocles' play Antigone, and you see people caught between the obligation they had to their family and the obligation they had to the state, and not being able to figure out how to resolve that conflict.
Willie, and I'm sorry, Willie, where are you?
Socrates.
So, Socrates, I know you. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Right. I used to be in Brooklyn. You know, Brian, you have wonderful programs today. You stirred me up with the first program about the memorial. I do a memorial every 9/11, but that's beside the point in my old neighborhood in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. But I really wanted to talk about loyalty. That's another issue. There is a loyalty to your own belief. In 1971, in the end of 70, I served in the Israeli army in the border between the... on the border on the Jordanian River, there was a war between the Palestinians and the PLO. That was, for me, soldiers against soldiers. And there I was notified that the next service as a reserve we're going to do in the West Bank. I just got so upset. I went over to my officer and I said, listen, you can jail me right now. I am not, this is 1970, I'm not going to the West Bank carrying a weapon on my shoulder in a civil setting where, God forbid, some kid will throw a stone at me, and I will have to respond with some shooting because I'm a hot-tempered person. So I just said, this is it. This is where I said, the loyalty to my own belief stands before the loyalty to my beloved Israel, because we were doing the wrong thing. And as a result, the circumstances were such that after 2 years, you know, I was faced with the Yom Kippur War. But to say the result, what happened is that when I stood in front of an Israeli officer, a high-ranking Israeli officer, and this was at the time that nobody dared saying anything, and I did not publish that. It was just a personal thing. Mm-hmm. That officer said to me, he was angry at me, and actually he said to me, we were sitting together in one room, and he said, people like you should be shot. I hate to say this. Then I said, you know what? You have the right to your opinion, and I have to. They have to the right to mine. This is a democratic country, and I walked out of there with saluting the person, and that was it. And that was, in other words, there is the people who refuse to go to Vietnam.
Yes.
They had this was not of a religious belief. This was out of certain belief of your own
individual ethics. Yes,
yeah.
Willie, thank you. It's an incredible story, and Eric, no matter which side of the question people come down on, it's an amazing story of a personal conflict of loyalties.
Yeah, it's a classic problem for loyalty, which is here you have a virtue that's been honored for thousands of years, that people have always seen as essential for holding together, you know, everything from love to family to friendship. And yet, we can see how easy it is for this virtue to become a vice. And one of the big problems with loyalty is that it often stands opposed to the truth of the matter. I mean, in a way, in a light sort of way, you can look at what Mark Twain said, which is he said the proper office of a friend is to stand with you when you're in the wrong. Anybody can stand with you when you're in the right. Mm. And so, in a way, we can look at loyalty. Sometimes will ask us to stand up for somebody who's in the wrong, and we could say, well, that offends my sensibility. I want to always stand up with truth. And on the other hand, don't you want your friends, if you're not exhibiting what Aristotle called an excess of wickedness, don't you want your friends to stand with you even if you're a little bit in the wrong? And so I think we can see how difficult it is to find where the right balance is with loyalty, when it's right, when it's not right, when it's a virtue, when it's a vice.
Eric Felton, who writes the Postmodern Times column for the Wall Street Journal, has now written the book, Loyalty, the Vexing Virtue. Thank you so much.
Brian, thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll finish up today with a few minutes with Rutgers poet Tara Betts. Stay tuned.